Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah, and I hope you missed me last week as I was in Colorado. There was just no way I was going to be able to do anything. I had a flat tire when I got up there, and it was about a 45-minute drive just to find a place to fix the tire. So there was no cell phone signals. We just barely had a telephone. In fact, some people didn't. I'm on AT&T, and we did have a little bit text-only signal. And once in a while, an email would kind of fly through the mountains up there, and you get that. So it was awesome. Didn't see a television, didn't see a computer, nothing up there. So wonderful time, and my thanks to all the people that put that on, for Ryan and Michelle, and for Bob and Penny, for Butch and Debbie. And, of course, the other speakers that were there, Jeff and Kim and Bill and Brad. Just an incredible time. They have scheduled Exodus 3. Camp Exodus 3 will be in 2015. Now, my question, can you see 2015? Can we see out that far, really? It's going to be an amazing thing to even think about. But it was a great time up there, 9,700 feet, and in speaking, you just have to stop, back up, and breathe for a moment, and wake up in the middle of the night, and you're trying to find some oxygen. But it was beautiful, the mountains of Colorado. A couple of things that have come up in the last week I want to talk about a little bit. Number one, as many of you know, a very good friend of mine, Barry Phillips, who is the musician behind Ephraim's Bridge, and also is the leader of a congregation in Gloucester, Virginia, which is House of David. Well, he has a new blog out right now, and it is called TheReturning.net. TheReturning.net. And I'll try to put a link on my site later on. But Barry is just kind of starting out, putting some, he's writing some articles, he's going to do some video on there. And just give you an idea, he wrote an article on the scripture of Yeshua that says, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lie his head. And, you know, I've heard that teaching, I actually heard that teaching used for a prosperity message one day. That you need to donate money to someone so that the Messiah would have a place to go. Well, of course, Barry didn't take it from that standpoint. And you'll have to go on and read his article. But it was just incredible. I think the way that Barry pulled this together is that he was looking at the scribes, the Pharisees, those who had hijacked his house. And what he was saying to those people there is, because your traditions have taken my presence away from the temple. He says, I don't have a place to go. And, you know, I kind of thought about that later on. And then the Messiah, the Creator, who is the Messiah? excuse me. He, in the creation story, he gives us a place that he resides. A place that it says he rests. And that is the Shabbat. And so, yes, there's no temple today, and still today, you know, there's not that, and I'm not saying this real well, the ultimate resting place that he will have for that thousand-year millennium. But today, we can have a place for him as we invite him into our homes, as we invite him into our congregation, and we invite him into our lives on the Shabbat. He has a place to dwell. So, I didn't say that good, but I think you might can work with it a little bit, and you can get a little bit of meaning out of it. So, go to Barry's blog, TheReturning.net, and I think it will be a great blessing to you. He's continuing to update and expand it, so it'll be good. Next, the peace process, or should we say the non-peace process, or maybe the suicide process, or that just stupidity that the nations continue to try to deal with. Well, we see that, and I have no idea, this is Wednesday as I'm recording. Who knows what the news is going to be about this by Shabbat. Well, I can tell you that I may not know exactly, but I can predict it's not going to go good. And the very fact that Israel, the leadership of Israel, that Bibi Netanyahu, would even be sending someone to discuss this is absolutely absurd. It is ridiculous. Only the Messiah is going to bring peace to the region. And any of this other stuff, you know, they talk about John Kerry starts talking about peace, and you just wonder what is going to happen. What's going to happen in America? What disaster is going to come upon America because of us, of this country, of other countries putting their nose where it doesn't belong? You know, it's not going to happen. And for them to go back to what is called the suicide borders, which is, of course, on the table, that Israel would give up part of Jerusalem and Israel would go back to the 67 borders. Now, I can tell you, just in Har-Barakah, just the areas where we've been harvesting, and by the way, Hayavel they've got the largest number of applications they've ever had, and they've opened the application process back up for just a few days. So if you have the ability, if you can go over there, you're going to need some help. Because I'm not sure if I said this a few weeks ago. I've been too long, slept many times since then. May not have slept a long time, but I've slept many times. They just planted 7,000 more vines on the mountain called Har-Barakah, the Mount of Blessing. And when I was speaking with Tommy the other day, they said they're going over, they're going to plant another 80 dunams, which I think is like 20 acres of vines on Har-Barakah. Listen, Har-Barakah, the Mount of Blessing, is going to be overtaken with vines. And that is prophecy. And to think these people are just going to walk away from it, I don't think so. I was talking with a friend the other day. He said, well, you know, think about Gaza. Yeah, I said, yeah, think about Gaza. Gaza was like, going to New York and saying, okay, we're gonna evacuate from the city. Nothing against the people in New York specifically, but it's a little different mindset, okay? They'll just go. As opposed to going to Texas, or worse yet, Oklahoma, and saying, okay, just evacuate your houses and you know, we're gonna take care of you. It's not gonna happen. Those people in Gaza, they went, but the people in Samaria, they saw what happened. And they continue to see what has happened to the people of Gaza. They're not going anywhere, at least not peacefully. And so we need to stand. We need to support them. And we need to stand with them. All right, couple more things quickly. One I'm very excited about this week. I just drove to Oklahoma City yesterday. I got an email that something had been shipped, called a new book. And so instead of waiting the 2 days, totally impatient, I know, but instead of waiting the 2 days to have them ship it from Oklahoma out here to Nowheresville, Oklahoma, I just drove to town. After driving 2,200 miles last week to Colorado and back, what's another 100, right? So I'm pleased to announce that our new book is, I don't know if you can see that real well, sun just came out real bad behind me. It's called They Walked Toward the Promises. And of course, this is my Torah commentaries that I wrote in first person style a couple of years ago. We went through, re-edited, added a few things. And so this is available right now on my website. And you can go after Shabbat, or if you're listening to this before Shabbat, we've got a lot of them, so please order them. So they're $15 each on the website. And if you'd like to go together with some people, or you want to get some for Hanukkah presents, and this is written in such a way that you can give it to a friend in church, or somebody that doesn't have a clue, right? I'm not going to say that. You can give this to someone and they can go through, and I think it's going to open a door for many people who have been kind of closed off to this thing of Torah. Now, I got to tell you about the cover real quick. Speaking of Barakah, this is one of the gentlemen that was there is on the picture, and we kind of got it as the patriarchs here. I know you can't quite see that real well, but it's like one of the patriarchs walking toward, well, on top, for those that have been to Harbor Akai and to for Hayavel specifically, that is the town of Harbor Akai. That's actually our caravans that we stayed in right there on the top. So they're walking toward the blessings, walking toward the promises. And so this is out, and get one. Get a bunch. The other thing is, God willing, a couple days from now, I know it's on the website already, this month's CD is going to be Messiah in Yom Teruah and in Yom Kippur. And so then that will allow you to kind of get ready for those festival days, which will be coming up in September. And then, in God willing, September 1st, I'll also be putting out another CD, which will be Messiah in Sukkot. Well, what's Messiah got to do with Sukkot, right? Everything. So that's kind of what life is going to be here pretty soon, and we'll see how it goes. So I'm going to record that, and then we'll see what happens. But that will complete this series this year of putting Messiah in the festivals. Just one more side note. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I want to just discuss it quickly after I get some coffee. I went up to Colorado and was asked on that Friday night, or excuse me, on this Sunday night we began, to just give a brief theme for the camp. And I went to Philippians chapter 3. And anybody that's ever had me sign one of my books in the past or anything, you know that I sign it with my signature. I use it with Be Strong, sign it, and I put Philippians 3:10, which is to know Him and the power of His resurrection. And so I began our camp out with those words. And the last message that was done on, what was that? That would have been on Thursday night, was from Bill Cloud. And Bill stood up and he said, you know, I've come to the place that I want to have as my, what I'm known for, to know Him. What's the specific scripture they use? Messiah in Him crucified. And so he said, you know, after spending 20 years in this Hebrew roots, messianic, whatever it is, movement, he said, I really feel like that's where we need to come back to. Messiah and Him crucified. Which goes along with the verse that I began in Philippians 3:10, to know Him and the power of His resurrection. And I was so encouraged, not because of what I said or what Bill said, I was so encouraged, and this came out in some of Brad's teaching and various other things that were happening, just that maybe we've turned a corner here and we're coming back to something that's been missing in many of the messianic Hebrew circles, and that is the person of Messiah, for it is all about Him. Is it not? If it's not all about Him, then we miss something. Okay, well, let's go to the scriptures, and we're going to go to Matthew chapter 22, starting in verse 1. Yeshua again, and when it says Yeshua again, used parables in speaking to them. Remember that back then, when he was living this out, okay, he didn't go to a place and go, okay, chapter 22 is starting now, chapter break, paragraph break. No, he was just continuing. So this verse could be translated like this, and probably it would help us in our mind. Yeshua continued speaking to them. Okay, take the white area out, take the big 22 out. Yeshua continued in what he had been speaking, and he continued expounding, and he said, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a feast, a wedding feast, for his son. And now, consider for a moment a king who is going to prepare a wedding feast for his son. Think of how elaborate that's going to be. You know, we just went through those two people over there in England, wasn't it, that had the baby or something. I was on the I was up in Colorado. It was really a non-news event up there that Prince whatever and his wife Kate, they had a baby. Okay, that's happened a few times. But the media and the people of England and it was this elaborate thing, you know, an elaborate event. Well, take that as just that's a human kingdom over there. Take that to the true kingdom, His kingdom, the kingdom of Yahweh. And when He throws an event, how elaborate is it going to be? He says, but He sent out His slaves to some of the invited guests to the wedding. They refused to come. The word slaves here, I have a real problem with. Let's put this in the context of what Scripture would teach here is He sent out His bondservants, those who had willingly given their lives over unto the kingdom. And that would be us, right? He sent us out to summon the invited guests to the wedding. They refused to come. Now, how many of us have gone to places, religious buildings, okay, and religious people, and have brought them a message of the kingdom? And what is the message of the kingdom? The message of the kingdom is very clear. It is faith in the king and obedience to his rules. Obedience to the rules of the kingdom. And so, how many of us have gone forth into the world to preach the gospel of the kingdom and have been turned down by those who you think would have been the ones that would have been so excited about in the first place? Those who have the appearance of being in the kingdom, and those are the ones who say no to it. And so the parable goes on. So He sent some more slaves, instructing them to tell the guests, "Look, I prepared my banquet. I've slaughtered my bulls and my fatted cattle, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding." He's pleading with them, even giving them an idea of what the wedding feast is going to be. He's saying, "I have prepared the best for you. It is going to be something far beyond what you are living today. Please come to the wedding." Now, it's interesting to note that the king could have forced these guests to come. He could have sent, instead of bondservants into the kingdom, he could have sent out soldiers into the kingdom. And in doing so, because he is the king, and even though they are the invited guests, they are the dominion, he could have required them to come. But he didn't. Why? Because he did not want to have anyone there that had been forced to come into the kingdom. The king's desire was to have those people there who desired to be a part of the festival, desired to be a part of the feasts. They came not because they were forced to, but because they wanted to be part of the king's life. And the events that surrounded the king's life. So he did not force them, he invited them. And their response? But they weren't interested and went off. How many times have I been to people and talked to them, been with people and talked to them? You've done the same thing. Talked with them about the kingdom, and they weren't interested. All right? Many of you have lived those verses. Oh, they're interested in their form, but they're not truly interested in His kingdom. one to, but they weren't interested and went off. One to his farm, another to his business. What does this mean? They were busy with their own lives. They were living within the midst of a kingdom. They were invited guests. They were living within the midst of a kingdom, but yet they were not submitted out of love to the king of the kingdom. They were more involved in their own lives than they were involved with the one who was giving them their very sustenance. See, in a kingdom, we don't, and this doesn't even relate to the King of England or the King and Queen of England or Belgium. Or we don't have kingdoms that are set up as the kingdom of Elohim is. We have these man-made things, so it doesn't really, today it doesn't translate as well as it would in that day, and specifically hundreds and thousands of years earlier, when a king had complete rule over everything in the kingdom, and you weren't fed, you were not clothed, nothing happened in your life outside of that king. Everything came from him. You know, I'm reminded of the time of the new moon, which we use the Jewish Siddur for the new moon. If you've ever read the Siddur during the new moon, it's really fascinating. And what it does is in reading it, it actually kind of it's a time of acknowledging that everything that we have comes from him. And so this is the context of what a kingdom was in that day, as opposed to what it may kind of mean today. And so they weren't interested. They had their own life, okay? And if we go over a couple of pages to Matthew chapter 24, we read about this same type of a thing happening at a time called the end times. And in Matthew chapter 24, verse 38, back then before the flood, people went on eating and drinking, taking wives and becoming wives, right up till the day Noah entered into the ark. And they didn't know what was happening until the flood came and swept them all away. It goes on from there. We'll start talking about those scriptures pretty soon. But in the day that he's talking about, it's kind of like this. It's very similar to this, is they were just living their own lives. They had no concept of something that was happening outside of themselves. And so in the midst of that, the rest grabbed his slaves, mistreated them, and even killed them. Okay, as we have gone, and let's reread that with the, and the rest grabbed his bondservants, mistreated them, and killed them. We see that that's happened with the prophets who came before. We see that this is something that will happen literally of the Son himself, of Messiah himself. But it's also a verse that should speak to us, is that as we go forth as bondservants, inviting people to the kingdom, there's going to be different levels of response. Some are going to say, you know, I've got my life figured out. I really don't need anything else. There are others who are going to take a little more, a little different approach here, and they are going to speak badly about you. They're going to start rumors about you. Oh, that's they're Judaizing, and that's legalism, and that's putting people under the law, and all this is what they're going to do. They're going to speak badly against you. Some are going to, then it's going to escalate to being mistreated, and then we know. I mean, go over to Revelation and read what happens to those who have a testimony of Yeshua and are also following Torah. Many of them will lose their lives because of it. Losing your life because you're inviting someone to a wedding feast. That is the progression that we're going in today. Our job as His bondservants is to just keep doing His will. Keep inviting, because in the midst of this, some are going to say yes. Now, the king was furious, and then he sends his soldiers. Okay, back to what I mentioned a moment ago. He could have sent the soldiers first. And in sending the soldiers first, he could have required people to come. But if the king required people, then it's not about choice. And if it's not about choice, then it's not about love. See, if you require, if you have a child that is being a little rebellious, you can require them to do something, and they can come, but it's not about love. Or you can go back and mend the relationship and invite them, and then they come because they choose, because it's about love. And that's what the whole book is about. It's about a relationship between us and the King. Us, the created and the creator, that is based upon the fact that we have a choice whether to serve Him or not. One of the men that was at the camp, we had emailed prior to being there. He said, "I want to discuss with you." He said, "I came from a Baptist background." He said, "I want to discuss with you this question of, can you lose your salvation?" And a little sideline, but I think it's worth throwing in. And I said, the error is not as much in the answer as it is in the question. Can we lose our salvation? Like, my car keys, where are they? I know they're around here somewhere, you know? No, I don't think we lose our salvation. Like, I just misplaced it. I know that I put it in the drawer yesterday, but I can't find my salvation. No, I don't see that. But can we walk away? Can we walk away from Him? The answer, I believe, is yes. For if there is a time in the future that we cannot willingly walk away from Him, choose not to follow Him, then we have also lost our ability to truly love Him. Okay. The king was furious, sent his soldiers. Okay, we've reached another level regarding these people who killed those murderers and burnt down their city. This is a very, I think this is an appropriate verse, very appropriate verse for us today, is in what we see coming, okay, in what we see, I mean, just right around the corner. Anyone who doesn't see that persecution, unlike what has been in the past, we've heard of persecution in third world countries, okay? But persecution is coming very quickly to America, to Canada. It's happening in Europe. Persecution has been for a long time in Israel. Persecution of those who are truly following Scripture. Those who truly follow Scripture in Israel have been persecuted for a long time. We can see that this verse is kind of, you know, things are happening, okay? And so, and of course, this talks about that He sent His soldiers out to do vengeance on those who had mistreated the bondservants. Let's go to Deuteronomy. in Deuteronomy chapter 32, and of course Deuteronomy 32 is the Song of Moses, which is, I think, pretty end times, isn't it? They sang the Song of Moses, this wild thought. In chapter 32, verse 40, "For I lift up my hand to heaven and swear, as surely as I am alive forever, if I sharpen my flashing sword and set my hand to judgment, I will render vengeance to my foes, repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood. My sword will devour flesh, the blood of the slain and the captives, flesh from the wild-haired heads of the enemy. Sing out, you nations, about his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants. He will render vengeance to his adversaries and make atonement for the land of his people." This is the last part of the Song of Moses, where he says that he is going to render vengeance. And that's many use this. Vengeance is his. He will repay. And so, one of the things that we must consider, we must stand on, is that we, as his bondservants, our job is not vengeance. He has those who, somewhere in the future, are going to render vengeance. But today, even in the midst of vengeance, even in the midst of the persecution, even in the midst of people saying, whatever, I got my own life, we need to continue to give the invitation. There's a time coming that things are going to change. When we get there, we'll talk about that one. And then it goes on. Interesting verses here. "Now the king came in and to look at the guests." Okay, got to back up. Missed a couple verses. "Then he said to his bondservants, 'Well, the wedding feast is ready, but the ones who were invited didn't deserve it.'" The king, he knew that to begin with, I think. But he made the proclamation to those that were there. Those people never deserved to be a part. Why? They didn't have the right heart. "So go out to the street corners and invite the banquet as many as you find. The slaves went out to the streets, gathered all the people they could find, the bad along with the good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests." And there's other places that is talking about the same verses, that said the same parable, that says, "Go out to the highways and to the byways." And you know, I call this the time that there will be a time that he will invite the highway byway people in. Those that nobody wants. You know, consider if you're driving down the road, you're driving down the highway, and there's a guy standing there that says, "We'll work for food." He's kind of a highway people. Those that are out there on the byways, was it talking about? Those that no one cares about. Those, the highway and byway people, are those that the world doesn't care about. They don't want to give the time of day. It's in America, for those of you overseas, it's what we have, it's the flyover country people. There's these stars today, the politicians and the stars that live in New York City, and they have to go to Los Angeles by plane. And what's so aggravating to them is they have to fly over people like Oklahoma or Kansas or Nebraska. Who would ever want to have anyone from Kansas or Nebraska as part of the kingdom? That's what their kingdom's all about. The highway and byway people are the ones that nobody cares about, but He cares. You know, I've seen this through the years, that especially this movement. We get some very special people, don't we? Once in a while, we seem to attract some special people, and sometimes special people are brought in to the feast, not only for them to be a part, but to see what our reaction will be to those special people. I'll let you ponder that one here as you would like. So it goes on and says, "Now when the king came to look at the guests, he saw there a man who wasn't dressed for the wedding. He said to them, 'Friend, how did you get in without wedding clothes?' And the man was speechless." There's a garment. There's a specific... the air conditioner is blowing right toward my Bible, and I don't have any... I can't reach anything right now. I got one page that keeps going and just bugging me here, and I can't move it the other way. My problem, right? There is a specific garment that in order to come into the feast, the festival, you had to have on a specific garment. But there was a man who came in, he got in somehow, and he didn't have that same garment. Well, what is the garment? Let's go to Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19, in verse 7. "Let us rejoice and be glad. Let us give Him the glory. For the time has come for the wedding of the Lamb, and His bride has prepared herself. Fine linen, bright and clean, has been given her to wear." What is the garment of the wedding? It is a linen robe. It is a robe that has been given to the bride, to the guests, to those who are at the festival, a specific robe of linen. Now, this word here in Greek, and I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but is a word that, through the best of my limited studies abilities, translates, can go back to the word in Hebrew of mitzvah, righteousness. And so there have been some, and continue to be some, who believe that our own righteousness can cover us. Could it be, I'm just kind of throwing this together here, to give you, you know, how did you get in here without wedding clothes, without the robe of righteousness? We had something that probably looked similar to a robe of righteousness. Consider that. It wasn't the robe, but it was a counterfeit robe. And maybe this word mitzvah, the robe of mitzvah, which the word there is translated obedience. Maybe it's in that word mitzvah that we can see that maybe a counterfeit, enough of a counterfeit that the person who is checking the guests as they walked in was deceived. He looked and said, "Oh, that looks like the robe of the wedding guests. It was close enough, but when the king came, he had the discernment to see that it was a counterfeit robe. To everyone else, it looked like the true robe, but for the king, he saw it as a counterfeit." How can we have a counterfeit robe? When we take this word mitzvah and we use it out of the place that it is supposed to be. For the mitzvah, the obedience, is to come out of the robe. Is to come out of who we are. Is to come out of what we've been covered by. As opposed to this other person who had made the robe. I hope you're understanding what I'm trying to say. It's one of those kind of tough ones to communicate. There are those who have made the robe out of mitzvah. Instead of the mitzvah coming from the robe is now the mitzvah. It is the faith and obedience, okay? There are those of us who come to Messiah in faith. Let me use it this way, and this was done in Colorado. It's a very good example. I got to reach over here and grab something real quick, so excuse me just a moment. Let's call this Kleenex. This is us. Okay? The hand. This is us. And when we come to Messiah in faith, He places on us a robe of righteousness. And out of this comes our life. There are others, though, that come up with their own form of righteousness that has nothing to do with faith, but has to do with their own works. And their works, they try their best to cover. And it may be that to us, sometimes we can't tell the difference. But the King knows the difference. The King knows whose mitzvah, whose obedience is coming forth out of His righteousness. He can tell the difference between those and those who are trying to get in the kingdom by their own righteousness. I think I've probably made myself about as clear as mud here, but I hope you can kind of work through that one a little bit and see that once again, it's the gospel is here in that our works come out of who we are. Now, another thing that's I think needs to be brought in here is in the Israel, who was wearing the linen robes? Was it not the Levites? Was it not the high priest? Now, this is not saying that when we come in to the wedding feast that we're all made Levites. There's teaching today that I believe is error, that said that in Messiah you and I are all Levites. No, there were Levites. The Levites were a separate group of people. And I don't have time to go into all this right now, but we are not of the Levitical priesthood today. We are of the priesthood of Melchizedek. The Messiah has become a priest after the order of Melchizedek, not after the order of Aaron. And like I said, I don't have time to develop that whole thing right here. Maybe one day we'll do that. But we are, and we can go to Hebrews, which I believe is valid. We can go to various scriptures. We see how we are a priesthood today after the order of Melchizedek, which is in Messiah Yeshua. Probably have confused everybody right now, including myself. But to this one, here's the important part, to this one who had on a counterfeit garment, he said to the servants, "Bind him hand and foot and throw him outside into the dark, into that place people will wail and grind their teeth." Now, this has been used by the Catholic Church to prove purgatory. I don't believe in purgatory. I do not believe that there is a place that you and I can pray people out of, that we can give money to somebody in a white robe called Father, and if we give enough money, that we're going to be able to get our whoever out of purgatory. I also don't believe that, as Mormonism teaches, you can baptize somebody out of purgatory. It just doesn't follow the scripture. But with that being said, this does not appear to be those who are cast into Sheol, but rather into a place of judgment outside of the kingdom. Okay? They're not inside, but they're not in Sheol. They're outside. They're weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Why? Because they missed their opportunity to be in the wedding feast. And I have to just kind of throw this one in here. I've heard a lot of teaching on this. I've heard the gambit of teaching on this verse. I today have come to the conclusion that there's a place of this verse that we don't understand yet. And we're probably not going to understand it this side of the wedding feast. The object of the parable should not be for us to dwell on those people. The object should be that we live our life in such a way that we're in the festival. We're in the feast. And that we also reach out to people in such a way that they desire to come into the feast. We're not to focus on the darkness and what is going on. We're supposed to focus on the light and drawing people to the wedding feast today. And all of those other things, I believe in the end, are going to, we'll figure them out then. For now, there's a whole pile of speculation on this. Interesting verse. For many are invited, but few are chosen. Here's my translation. Many are invited, but few accept the invitation. Few. That's one of those words that you wish were different. There are few that accept the invitation. That doesn't mean that we are allowed the right to get discouraged and quit inviting. It's our job to go forth and invite the many. It is their responsibility whether they accept the invitation or not. And remember, the invitation, the acceptance or refusal of the invitation has nothing to do with you. Has nothing to do with me. It's about him. Whether they refuse or accept the invitation, we're just the one when Stephen got married just over a year ago in Korea. Since he was in a far away country, we took care of the invitations. And so we addressed, and Kathy took care of it. I ain't doing that. But she took care of addressing the invitations and sending them out and putting the postage and all of those things on it. And she sent the invitations. Now, what a person did with the invitation. Kathy was just the messenger. She was just the one that put the invitation together and sent it out. If a person accepted or rejected or responded to the invitation in any way, it was based upon their relationship with Stephen. The relationship. It had no, Kathy was just the kind of the go-between. That's a way of saying it like this. You and I today, we're just the one addressing the envelopes. We're putting the envelope together and we're handing it out to people. Whether they accept the invitation or not is up to them. Now, I don't have time. We're gonna stop right there. We'll get into this further testing of Yeshua next week, of the give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And we'll make a little bit of progress through chapter 22 of Matthew. I got to tell you, chapter 22 is not my favorite place, at least this part. You know, I get to this part of 22 when he is dealing, and the end of 22 gets to, there's some great stuff. But I get to this part of chapter 22, and by this point, I'm getting weary of the scribes. I'm getting weary of religion. Let me put it that way. Okay, the scribes and the Pharisees are those who have the false robe. They have the counterfeit robe because their righteousness, their mitzvot, they're portraying their own robe of linen. And saying that I can come because of my own mitzvah instead of my mitzvah coming out of his robe. Okay? And so I'm getting to this point in Matthew that I'm ready to kind of move on from these people. Because religion wears me down. Anytime I get around religious people, it just seems to drain the energy out of you. Because their life, in the end, is meaningless. And so this is where we're at here in 22. We're kind of coming to the end here of these draining religious people. And we're going to kind of, in a week or so, We're going to turn a corner, and we're going to get away from them a little bit, for a while at least, and we're going to get back to the person of Messiah and what he's talking. It's just, I hope you see the differences. So got to keep moving on, right? All right, with that, maybe I made some sense. Those of you that missed me last week are going, why did I miss him? He never makes any sense anyway. Well, if I do, see you next week. Remember, they walked toward the promises, and not to toot my own shofar, but I will. I think I'm just really pleased, and my thanks to those who helped put this together. And as I look back, and I remember writing some of these, it was like it was an experience to write this, and to be able to kind of walk in the midst of these people as if we were walking it out. So I pray that this is a blessing to you, and you can get these. Maybe this will make a great present. You know, we got those holidays coming up, and if you got somebody that they just can't, you know, they're not going to deal with Hanukkah. You got to give them something, maybe. Who knows? Maybe you want to give them something that will. It's better than a sweater. Okay, this would be a lot better than a sweater with reindeer on it. It may even go farther than some book that is bashing what they're doing. Maybe you'll give them something about life. Okay, so if please order those and. Give me a response to it. Would appreciate that also. Okay. with that, Shavuot Tov. Have a wonderful, blessed, prosperous week. And Bezrat Hashem. See you next week.
Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai Sem lecha shalom.